Hello and welcome to Real Geeks. I am Crash and Burn, and with me as always is Mike Montgomery.
And this week we are once again returning to the good old wonderful world of Disney with the first comic book, and yes, I do technically have to put that in air quotes, film that I was ever introduced to, 1981's Condor Man.
Who can save Princess Juliet, held captive by the evil Count Lorca? Who can save the city? Who? Who?
Sorry I had to get so violent, but it was the only language they understood.
Now, I can understand the interest in this. You know, number one, you have your nostalgia.
Oh, yeah.
It's yours and yours alone. number two, you have, of course, the always hot discussion for the last 15 years of a comic book movie. Number three, you have Disney doing a thing. Sometimes Disney does a thing and it doesn't work out. Sometimes Disney does a thing with a superhero and it doesn't work out. Sometimes Disney embarrasses themselves. But my question, like those are two things that make this movie important to you. My question is, what sin have I committed that you force this upon me?
I believe I did specifically say last week that. Yeah, this is the pain before pleasure. This movie is, like, objectively, is this a good movie? No!
No. No.
No.
No. No. No. It's unique. It's not what you expected is going in. It very quickly pivots to a very entirely different film than, say, the title would make you believe, or the title credits would make you believe, or the first 5 minutes of the movie, and by that measure, the last 10 minutes of the movie. There's a different movie in the middle of this movie that kind of works out.
As soon as this film starts, the opening titles, let's be very clear, have nothing to do with anything. You have credits that it's a beautiful font, but you could almost read the actor's name and the character's name as all one name. So it quite literally says, like, Michael Crawford Woody, Oliver Reed Krokoff. But for some reason, the animated and live action mix in this needless opening sequence is on a level that has only ever been matched by Roger Rabbit. And I can't believe I'm saying this.
No, it's true. It's annoyingly distracting once you realize that's not what the movie's going to be, because the animation is top notch. It's frustratingly, like, fluid and just a wonder to look at. And it's there for no reason aside from, I'm pretty sure the beginning and ending of this film was entirely made up in editing.
Oh, it, yeah, it probably was like, this is very, I think this is like this almost standard, okay, Disney animators. Yeah. Okay, look, we know we have, I can't remember the timeline, so we have Tron, either we've just put it out and pissed you off, or we're in production and pissing you off. One of the two. So we're going to give you this so you can do something. And these people create this old dude who might as well have been Adrian Toomes showing up far, far earlier than Disney ever even thought about buying Marvel, who's flying around, and as he's flying around the Champs-Élysées in Paris, this animation and live action mix is so good that at one point you clearly see this animated character crash into a moving vehicle, and it has no right to be that flawless.
I like that point. That was a good point.
Yeah, it was so just like, Roger Rabbit is still like a decade away. What the hell?
Yeah, I think it's just where they decide to put, like, they suddenly got an animation budget for like the credits, and so they threw that entirely at their internal department, and their internal department, having so much time to work on it, came up with something truly, like,
yeah,
gorgeous in terms of animation work, stuff, the kind of stuff that they were capable of and eventually would pull off on a grander scale. But yeah, god damn it, I hate nothing more than, or hated as a kid, nothing more than an animated intro that like was far better than the movie.
That's
nothing, yeah. Pissed me off more.
No, that's fair.
Oh, it is. This is an oddity. Like, it's not pure crap like the Majestic or the Avatar movies or Airbender, just to be clear, that both of those things suck.
Yeah.
this has so many odd elements that are out of place in this film. Even things that, like, okay, he's named Condor Man. Sure, he probably has to wear a ridiculous costume and has a ridiculous contraption to fly. Okay, and then you see it and you're still like, that feels so fucking weird. I'm watching a movie called Condor Man. I know he looks like this, and it's still just like, that's not right.
No, no.
None of this is right.
No, and like I said, objectively, no, this is not a good movie. Is this the kind of wholesome thing that you could use if you wanted to introduce your 6-year-old to the superhero film genre? Yeah. Like,
sure. Yeah. If, you know, Richard Donner's Superman Part 1 or 2 was rented that week. Sure.
I mean, again, not wrong. Like, and we did touch on this a fair bit during our review of The Black Hole, where this is very much during that period of early Disney live action films where they really wanted to do live action. They really wanted to try to hit those things that were popular, but didn't really know how to do it.
Like, the funny thing is, every one of these films in that, I guess, era, genre, whatever you want to call it, they would go on in form to become far more popular versions. Like, there's nothing inherently wrong with a comic book movie unless you fuck it up. By this point, this movie came out in 1981. By this point, Richard Donner's Superman had existed. The challenge had been made. Would you believe a man can fly?
Yeah.
And they showed Christopher Reeves in a onesie and everyone went, yes, please, more of that. And you got one amazing sequel and two, let's not talk about them out of it, which, like, that's pretty good for Christopher Reeves in a onesie being pulled by like a cable. And then you look at this, Michael Crawford in a onesie being pulled by a cable. And it's just, aren't you the Walt Disney Corporation? Oh, you're not the bitchin' hot sweetness that I know and love. Oh, okay. Yeah. You're the weird fever dream post Walt's death where they're like, shoe, people like shoe, fucking ridiculous era. And like, as I was saying, like, you can see these genres go off and become more popular. And I swear, when I said fever dream earlier, I mean it. I think the CEO woke up after having prophetic visions of the future of Walt Disney, but he had no way to contextualize it. He had no idea, like, when it was going to occur. So he's describing shit like the MCU. And people around him are like, oh my God, he's senile. Yeah, we can do that. Yeah. Sure, sir.
Yeah, I mean,
he'll have a man who has a flight suit with bird wings. Oh, sure. Okay, yeah.
I mean, a lot of people like to try to create this early 80s MCU with the versions of the characters that were around at that point. And with enough crowbarring, you could make Condor Man the early 80s version of the Falcon.
Well, see, I think there's a more metacontextual option on the table. So because this film is so bad, my mind wandered a lot. And I went looking for like weird connections and tiny little things. And so this is, oh my God, this is based on a book initially way back in like the 1960s by Robert Sheckley. Robert Sheckley was, among other things, a Star Trek writer. And he wrote Immortality Inc., which became Free Jack, which we're going to watch because I love me some Free Jack and it is a pile of cyberpunk crap.
Oh my God, I don't think I've seen Free Jack in years. Yeah, I'm down for this.
Emilio.
Yeah, it was Emilio and Mick Jagger, right?
Yeah, Mick Jagger's actual first movie role.
Okay, I have not seen that since I was a kid. And yeah, I'm 100% down for this.
Awesome. We're going to roll hard with some cyberpunk and post-apocalyptic in the next couple of months. It's going to be brutal. I can't wait. But anyway, it's based on a book called The Game of X by Robert Sheckley. And The Game of X kind of came out at the true initial height of the spy gentleman thriller thing, James Bond mania.
Yeah.
In the mid-60s. And it was a brilliant satire of the whole, you know, like CIA spying on each other, Cold War crap, in which a person, just a fucking rando, a random American citizen is chosen by the CIA to pretend to be a fictional super spy that they have like spread rumors about so that their enemies are like, well, you know, we got to make sure that Agent X doesn't appear because then we're truly fucked. And it's like, you know, we didn't have to deploy shit. They panicked and ran. So he gets involved, like initially he's just supposed to be a front man, like meeting someone, but he gets involved in a plot where essentially due to stupid luck and not understanding what spycraft actually is and like going with his assumptions about what spycraft are from culture, he manages to bumblefuck his way to like, you know, through an entire James Bond adventure. To the point that he gets this arrogant ego that, well, maybe I am the world's greatest spy because, like, have you seen all these dead henchmen? Have you seen all, can you see this turtleneck? And so the book literally is part of the inspiration for, like, Austin Powers and Archer. Any really good spy satire goes back to The Game of X. And And so the good people at Walt Disney, in adapting a spy novel, decided to make it about a comic book writer who who dresses up like one of his main characters to try, like, you know, comic book tech, because he writes under the absurd rule, personal rule, that if he himself cannot achieve something, he's not going to write about it in the comic book. So, what, number one, has this man already thwarted evil?
I mean,
I must assume.
Yeah.
Number two, the CIA using a comic book artist and writer, creator, what have you. That happened. It's called Jack Kirby and the Iran Hostage Crisis. This could, and again, I believe that occurred before this, or no, yeah, Reagan was, anyway, this is of an era. This is a zeitgeist. In an attempt to get the hostages, the American hostages out of Iran during the Iranian Revolution and then the hostage crisis, there was, you know, it's the movie Argo by Ben Affleck,
yeah.
Except that's that cartoonist who comes up with all the sketches and stuff that they need for, like, the set design, because they're going in pretending they're going to film a movie based on a Jack Kirby comic. And they got Kirby to actually draw up a bunch of just, like, New Gods, Eternals horseshit. Just constant stream of Kirby nonsense without any context. The artwork is beautiful. But this could have been that. This could have been a furtherance of that, an extrapolation based on the fact that Jack always said he killed four Nazis himself. Well, on recon. Jack Kirby's a fucking super spy anyway.
And I mean, even if his claims are not true, I for one am willing to take his word for it just on general principle.
Yeah, like, here's the thing. Even if you can't prove that Jack Kirby himself, Captain America, murdered four Nazis with his bare hands or possibly a knife, he was in the United States recon,
yeah,
and absolutely was sent out on missions into enemy territory alone with just his knife.
And I mean, with the idea of Woody being this comic book creator who will only write about stuff that he knows he can actually do.
Mm-hmm.
Conceptually, there is a fair bit to play with there. Like, you look at...
There is.
Like, you look at fandom's love of and adherence to canon and continuity and all that. There is a lot to play with there were this movie to have been made today. 1981?
Yeah, I mean, there's a really...
Not so much.
Yeah. No. And there's like... They do show elements of that potential. Like, at the beginning of the film, he's attempting a Condor Man suit that he has built himself, and it is a piece of shit.
Yeah.
However, by the end of it, he's gotten the CIA to build a version of it that actually works, along with a Condor boat and a Condor mobile. Yeah.
The Condor car.
They didn't... Yeah, the Condor car. Terrible name. They should have just given him a plane on, like completionist logic of, like, one,
yeah,
you're a condor, so here's a plane. Two, you got a boat and you got a car. Come the fuck on, where are we gonna give you a condor locomotive? Make it fly, like in Back to the Future 3.
No. No, obviously he needs a home base, the condor nest.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Yeah, okay, so anyway, before this spirals, because it's a spirally one.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, he's a comic book artist slash writer, and his friend happens to be in the CIA, and as friends in the CIA are off to do, I guess sometimes they're just like, hey, buddy, you want to, want to help me extract a defector from the Soviet Union? It'll be fun. And his answer is, huh?
Yeah, like, a couple of things to establish, like, particularly with just the opening of this movie. Two things.
Yeah.
Now, all credit in the world to Michael Crawford, who, in his role as Woody, like, if nothing else, the man has thrown himself into the role and gone all out. So I will.
Oh, he has. But why are we doing Jerry Lewis? Why is this watch? Why am I watching Michael Crawford, the man who was the original Phantom of the Opera and helped make it the juggernaut of Broadway it is, or was rather, until about a week ago? Why am I watching this man do his most annoying performance he could possibly come up with?
Well, that I don't know, but if nothing else, but just to finish my initial point, the simple fact is Michael Crawford, incredible work, all the respect in the world. The character he's playing, Woody Wilkins, is not a functioning adult, and I will not be told different. And
he definitely is not.
When I say not a functioning adult, let me be very clear. Were this movie to be made today in this slapstick comedy style, that lead role is going to Will Ferrell, and no thank you.
I could see that, because I also got a lot of vibes of Spies Like Us and The Man Who Knew Too Little. And Will Ferrell is absolutely the heir to the throne of Chevy Chase and Bill Murray in terms of the kinds of films he does and the parts he does. And it's just, I could see that. And it would be a Holmes and Watson style mess. Just bad jokes all over the place. Weird little stunt moments that's like, okay, you attempted something with that car race. I've never seen so many Porsches wrecked in my life. But it's so out of place with everything else. And it's an odd thing because it's a Disney movie.
Yeah.
So technically it has good production. Technically it's capable. Not as a good movie, but it's like, no one's doing bad shots. The lighting isn't off in this. The audio isn't fucked. It's all operating exactly as it should, making bad choices.
Yeah, speaking of bad choices, the second point that I wanted to get to in the opening is when we're introduced to Woody's best friend, Harry, the file clerk, yeah, sure you are, at the CIA. Mm-hmm. That man is possibly the worst best friend that I have ever seen in film, because the conversation that he has with Woody about essentially, if you try to jump off of the Eiffel Tower with those wings, you will more than likely die, doesn't happen until 5 or 10 minutes mm-hmm. after Woody has tried to jump off of the Eiffel Tower with wings that anyone who is even remotely familiar with the works of Leonardo da Vinci already knows there's no way in hell they're going to work.
And I, so if this film was redone, I suspect there would be an element added because it's kind of already there and it needs to be there. And due to how we know this stuff works now, it was definitely there. And so, combining the fact that you said he is not a functioning adult, he's not, and his file clerk friend is already like, he's present while he's doing these dumb semi-suicidal things. I think the CIA has been grooming him to be an asset for a while. They're essentially keeping him alive and afloat and like having him test some, because like, you don't get a perfect suit out of like the CIA, hardware people the first time. He was working with a prototype they were like slapping together and then incepting into his mind so that he thought he came up with it. And they're just like, we confiscated the design after. I mean, it was a piece of shit, but we had some things to work from.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, no, he is 100% a ready asset. And what we're seeing is his graduation to active asset.
And you know what? To be perfectly frank, I would like to see a remake of Condor Man. But on the condition it's not as a slapstick comedy.
Hmm.
And I think we've already started this potential remake down the path of like an early George Clooney spy movie.
So funny thing that you say that. The word condor got connected to a lot of like spy thriller shit around this time. And one of the more successful aspects in entertainment, and I think it semi gets name checked, but like referenced in this. Because one of the characters, like, I'm not Robert Redford, right?
Yep.
And so that would be probably a reference to 3 Days of the Condor, which is a CIA, you know, like film based on a book called 6 Days of the Condor. And it's like, okay, so what if we take the far more serious version of that, take its story core out, and inject it right in the ass of Condor Man? You know, so that it's wearing Condor Man like a glove.
Nice. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Another fun, just quick tangent concerning the use of the word condor. The CIA actually did have a civilian recruitment program for assets called Operation Condor that was active at this time. It just happened to be focused mostly in South America.
Yeah.
That's fucking stupid. like the kind of just weird coincidence or the vibe at the time that, oh, we're doing spy shit? Put the word condor in there. Yeah, yeah, that's good. Fascinating zeitgeist.
Yeah, no, nobody will make that connection at all.
Yeah, I saw the word condor on that secret file. Is that some spy shit? I bet that's some spy shit. Can I see the spy shit, please?
Yeah, and like was it? Like this was live action Disney at a point when Disney really had no idea how to do live action, and it's kind of like they looked at Superman and went, "We want to do that." Our live action division doesn't quite have the money for that.
Yeah, or
so
the skill.
Let's just take it and let's do a James Bond movie.
Yeah, so what we get is Michael Crawford dressed like a condor hanging from what is very obviously just like a crane, because his posture is horrendous for a man flying. He just, like, he looks so deflated even when he's trying so hard. Someday I'll be a knight. Someday. Shut up.
But, I mean, you have our Russian Bond girl who... Barbara Carrera, I have to say, if nothing else, the accent wasn't half bad. Like, you could put her into a Roger Moore-era Bond film, and I feel like she would
fit. Yeah, she's giving the standards. Yeah, she's giving the standard, like, a spy thriller Bond girl performance. It's quality for, like, a relatively shallow character slash, like, cliche stereotype.
Yeah.
As you say, you could just pop her into almost any Bond, classic Bond film, and it'd be like, yeah, that makes sense. That's underwritten. Mm-hmm. Yep. Sure is. And so, like, she's kind of the stable core around which all this rotates, because technically she's the MacGuffin You know, she's a defector. So she's who all the crazies rotate around, and so she has to be the most stable point. So on one side of our crazies, of course, is Condor Man. Is it Willie Wilkins or some shit?
Woody
Wilkins. Like, okay, that it's a solid. This movie could not decide if it wanted to be a comic book or a spy thriller, and it comes down to things like Woody Wilkins, Condor Man. Okay, that's a solid like Marvel style, you know, yeah. Early DC name. Woody Wilkins, sure, absolutely. But then you don't make him actually fucking Condor Man. Okay, commit, pick a lane, commit. And then you get to our villains and you get two, like one decent, really old, like 60s style villain and one decent Roger Moore era style villain, maybe Indiana Jones style villain. And it's just, Oliver Reed, how drunk are you? Because I feel like if he was aware what movie he was in, yo, like, just take the clip from the end when he jumps out of the boat before, like, the secondary henchman commits suicide. And just, that's the moment Oliver Reed suddenly sobered up was like, where the fuck am I? Oh, God, I said no to this script. How did I end up here? And he throws himself out of a boat and swims to Japan where he drinks all the fucking sake.
Yeah, it's like...
because he's Oliver Reed.
Yeah, you could just see that, okay, you're going to jump out of the boat so that we can keep your character alive for the sequel. And you could almost hear in the back of Oliver Reed's mind that moment of, yeah, I'm going to jump out of the boat, but if you think I'm doing a sequel...
like, if he's kind of supposed to be the Blofeld, you can just recast him, but definitely Oliver Reed was like, they're gonna make me shave my hair. Fuck this.
Oh yeah, no, and like, make no mistake, he is 1000% supposed to be their Blofeld.
Oh yes, like, yeah. And, but like, either they underwrote for Oliver Reed, which like even at this point, you know, he's a good actor. And like, that's the other thing is, you know, Michael Crawford at this point was a good actor because he had done a shit ton of live theater and some movies and TV and shit. Like, this isn't his first rodeo, despite what his performance says. This is a very strange fucking film.
It really is. It's once again objectively terrible, but
yeah,
there's, you just can't quite hate it.
And okay, the best way I can like rate this film in a sense, not that we're to the ratings yet, but just to give a esoteric sense of it, it took me about 6 hours to watch this movie.
Oh my God.
But I did keep coming back to it. Maybe this time it'll be good. No. Oh, I need to go do my laundry. I'll see you later, movie. 6 hours. So I was brought up on the Disney, like early Renaissance and Renaissance. That's my Disney stuff. I did not watch this era of movie. Neverending Story, absolutely. Yeah. Black Cauldron, The Rescuers Down Under, absolutely. Goonies now. I think the cutoff was around Goonies, and this era being pre-Goonies and such. I have no positive memories of nostalgia that is connected to like this era of Disney film, but I always knew that it always felt wrong. Like, you'd see clips of it and it's like, that doesn't smell right. That's not, that Disney's off. And so it's very strange having to watch like we've watched pretty much all of these. I assume there's one or two left from this era, but we've watched pretty much all of these, and every one of them has been fascinatingly difficult to watch on a, like, I don't want to watch you level. But, like, I'm invested in for a few reasons. One, number one, I have to be able to talk about it on the fucking show. But number two, it's the same thing that drove me to watch, like, Batman versus Superman probably a half dozen times. And it's like, There has to be something here. There has to be. I have to find it. You know, just losing my goddamn mind chasing, you know, a dragon's tail. I'm never going to catch it.
Now,
I should start doing heroin.
Okay. First and foremost, based solely on what you just said. I hate Batman v Superman with such a passion that I cannot, I could never watch it six times without needing to grab an automatic weapon afterwards. So I don't want to hear you complain.
I had to dissect it.
I don't want to hear you complain about any of my picks ever again.
I needed to know why. How does this... Why? So I took Frankenstein's monster apart and played with him a little bit.
But also, like, for me in general, this movie is that... You just kind of smile and shake your head at it. Because, like, a lot of the...
No. You smile and shake your head at Superman IV, The Quest for Peace. Because it tried and failed. This you asked to leave. Thank you very much.
This is the film where, like, there are sequences where clearly the writers did one thing and one thing only, which is they put on it From Russia with Love, sat down and took notes, and said,
"Yeah,
how do we do that, but cheaper?"
Yeah, and to tell the truth, when it is not referencing any comic book aspects... or Condor Man aspects, it's a decently bad spy film from the early 80s. It's dated. It feels like it's from, like, the mid 70s, and even then was kind of like, you know, you're only getting away with this because Roger Moore is really fucking charming. If this was any other film, go fuck yourself.
We mentioned the Condor Mobile, and that entire first part of the defection, which, how I'm pretty sure this actually did a defection mission before James Bond.
Mm-hmm.
Because I can't think of one pre-Timothy Dalton.
And it does it using all of the tropes that, like, are in James Bond, and one would then presume would appear in a defection mission, and then, when it does occur, appear in the defection mission. Because,
yeah, of
course it will. This is all paint by numbers. And that's why, like, I enjoyed and hated the chase scene. So, like, the idea of the Russian... the KGB or what have, having their own, like, pursuit squad, and they're super deadly, and they've got awesome Porsche 911s that are all painted black and shit. And it's like, yeah, all right. That's proper silly shit. That's proper spy silly shit. That they're chasing a yellow and red painted Batmobile is like, no. give him an Aston Martin or make it a joke and give him a Mini Cooper and something that, like, absolutely cannot out race a Porsche 911, let alone six of them, is like blowing them away, because that's stupid in the right way.
Yeah, yeah. And,
you know, have that crappy little car he picks them up from the jail in actually have like turbo.
Yes.
Oh yeah, this is the most like lethal and fast car on the road. It looks like a pile of shit. Well, thank you, Will Smith.
Like, but if nothing else, with the car chase, now, again, rules of a Bond film, your henchmen's cars have to be a fleet of black vehicles. That's just how it works. And as I previously stated, mm-hmm. my God, this film was taking notes.
Mm-hmm. And I will commend it for committing to blowing up actual things instead of models. We saw a bunch of Porsche 911s get fucking wrecked, along with a couple of speedboats. They got fucking wrecked.
Oh,
and that was refreshing.
Yeah, not just wrecked. This is the classic old school. As soon as the car has the slightest impact with anything solid, it explodes in a ball of fire that should not be physically possible. Mwah. Mm-hmm. Beautiful. But, like...
terrific.
Just, I have to give them credit. The Prognoviech, the Pursuit Squad, their formation driving. I have to give them a shout out, because that was kind of nice. Especially how the Condormobile and Woody uses the rear guns in the right sequence to let them just perfectly dodge every time.
Yeah, no, it's a funny like flip of a basic trope. You know, oh God, they're so good. They even avoid the rear gun, which is usually the thing that, you know, like spies pull out as the ha-ha. But instead, we get the ramp, and the ramp. It's like suddenly I'm watching BattleBots.
Yeah, frankly. But not only that, but speaking of ramps, though, now as a fan of the original Knight Rider, and some of those turbo boost sequences. Where they either could not or simply did not bother to hide the ramp that they had to use so that the car could make the jump.
Yeah.
There is a moment with one of those Porsches that just made my heart so happy, where it hits a bush, not just hits a bush, but goes flying. Essentially using the bush as a ramp, just like from the way that it's shot.
Mm-hmm.
That is just so beautifully terrible.
Oh yeah, no, just like, that's not how that works. But again, because this is a competent film, the shot is really fun to watch.
Yeah.
The sequence is eh. The film is eh. The script is eh. But because it's competently made, the visual is, oh.
And if but generally most people who are fans of 80s film, there's that one cliche stupid thing that they thoroughly enjoy. Some people enjoy a good use of dummies in a film.
Yeah, there's some good dummies in this film.
Some people, like myself, enjoy those obvious ramps that should not be there. Some, again, like myself, love themselves some good rear projection.
The moments of rear projection with front graphic overlay with Oliver Reed sitting there staring blankly ahead. Oh, gold.
Oh, no,
in a helmet.
Mm.
With him just sitting there being like, why am I wearing this goddamn helmet? I'm not in a real car.
I mean, yeah, some of the flight sequences. It's just beautiful.
Like, yeah, everything about this is, it's the best worst ever.
Yeah.
Everything is, that was the best flight suit they could come up with. That was the best flight like approach to making it look like someone flying in a suit that they could come up with, because they're doing their best. Like, that's the thing about this. The problem was that the studio was behind the times. They didn't hire people who were up on the newest stuff. They didn't pay for the newest equipment. They didn't bother to find out about the newest equipment. They essentially ignored Lucasfilm until like later in the 80s. Because they were like, oh, what does that kid know about doing anything?
Yeah,
fuck
yeah.
Him. Fuck him and his success. Fuck him and his money. who knew? But so like everything that they're attempting is the height of the abilities of the production staff. Problem is, of course, they're dealing with like 70s era, mid 70s to early 70s era tech. And watching this, like knowing that this is a terrible film, but seeing the potential for it and their interest in doing a sequel, this should not have been a movie. This should have been a syndicated television show.
Yeah.
Because that's the level that you can pull off with their effects and such. And the character is a comedic television character. You can have reoccurring adventures making fun of so many spy tropes and build up a secondary cast and make Oliver Reed's villain actually like return every single episode with a new henchman and just drive the joke into the ground. And you can have other really stupid looking superhero characters show up, and you can have like a double universe going on of like spy shit and superhero shit. And it's not, the spy shit is kind of real but silly, and the superhero shit is like literal in-universe fiction. And yet, oh god, no! And then you end up having Oliver Reed with like a stupid fucking like Russian alphabet letter on his head on a cowl, like a red cowl that just goes into this cape that flows down, and he's like Soviet man. He's standing there like drunk and wobbling and just, how did I get to this point? And it's the greatest finale of 80s television since fucking MASH. This should have been a TV show. This should have been a TV show. It would have worked. And it would have been merchandisable. Let me be really clear. They could have made money off this shit instead of, you know, not.
I do know that they actually did merchandise the movie. Now, how successful that merchandise
was, Jesus Christ.
I don't know. But I do remember seeing diecast versions of the Condor Mobile and I think the boat when I was a kid.
I am very shocked. I'm very shocked. I have never... So before you mentioned this film, I had only heard of it twice. I had never actually seen any aspect of it until, like, I think I read about it in an article. I had never seen a still. I had never heard it referenced. I had never in a pawn shop, a junk shop, or an old, like, used toy shop found anything relating to it whatsoever. This IP vanished off the face of the fucking earth.
Oh, no, it absolutely did. I mean, the simple fact is, this is a movie that was made 40 years before it could be made well.
Yeah, like, it's amazing looking at this and Howard the Duck and knowing that there's only about 5 years difference there in terms of production quality. And yet they both missed the mark in interesting ways that at the very fucking least they would have been entertaining if made now or for the last 20 fucking years. It's bizarre. I don't know what to make of it.
Yeah, and to go back to your TV series idea for a second, that actually I think would have been a great way to go, because that would have saved a life. And what I mean is, I don't know if you noticed this, but Jean-Pierre Calfin, who played Morovich, the chief henchman, the leader of the Prognovich, and I keep saying this just because I enjoy saying Russian names.
Yeah.
But the way that man's head kept snapping to the side on like all of his close-ups, if he was the lead henchman for an entire television series, that man would have been paralyzed before the premiere of season two.
See, I think he would have died after the, I'm going to say, two-part TV movie pilot, a la like Battlestar.
Yeah, yeah.
He would have died at the end of that, and then you would have been introduced to every episode a new villain, and the next one would have absolutely have been a fembot. But like, we're not even like shilling for a mask with a couple of circuits on it. We're talking silver paint. Just silver paint. Like, they peel off some ham from her face, and it's just her face with silver paint.
And
that becomes a reoccurring villain, and then we bring back Head Snap Boy, and he is half robot and has like, he's got a hockey helmet on, and on the back they've like kind of tried to shape it, the plastic, into a brain and painted it pink. And if he snaps his head fast enough, you don't really get to see it in detail, and it looks amazing on 1970s CRT.
And make no mistake, this man could absolutely snap his head fast enough, because my God, the way he whipped that thing around. And like,
yeah, this is a film that even until like the early 2000s, I think could have been made into a TV series.
Yeah.
And the inherent corniness could have flourished. I don't think it can anymore, because it is explicitly not a part of any extended universe. That's just death now. That's it.
I mean, frankly, yeah. And it's almost an extra tragedy, because you sometimes hear about people wanting to see something like Greatest American Hero come back, and Disney has a property right there in Condor Man that could serve that function so perfectly. Because if nothing else, the performance Michael Crawford was giving, I feel like, was half Jerry Lewis, half Greatest American Hero.
Yeah, I can see that too. There is a lot of that in there. And I worry that, well, I presume that one of the reasons that they would not use Condor Man to make a satirical superhero project anymore is it would reflect all of their failures in Marvel without allowing it to be a Marvel property to lampshade it. If Disney wanted to make a satire of superheroes, I think that they should go ahead and make the like TV or cinematic version of Not Brand Ech and go through it the quote-unquote canon legit way, you know.
Yeah,
Frobisher Man show up and go through that whole fucking thing. Have the Great Lakes Avengers show up. By having it be out of the IP and making fun of it, it would be too powerful. Condor Man is, despite looking and seeming and being incredibly stupid, a potential nuclear weapon to end the superhero films as a dominant force. This has to be locked away so that it does not spread its evil and doom all mankind.
Well, I mean, if we learned nothing from the Falcon and the Winter Soldier, the simple fact is we can do it. We have the technology.
I mean, yeah, it would look better. But should it? You could, but should you?
Like, but part of the reason this had such a special place in my heart is, of all things, Dana Elkar, who in Condor Man plays Harry's boss, Russ.
Mm-hmm.
He's kind of the M of this movie.
Yeah.
But as someone who grew up watching the original MacGyver and then seeing Elkar here, because Elkar was also essentially the boss slash best friend in MacGyver.
Yeah.
That was what hooked me and MacGyvered me into this insanity.
I have never seen a full episode of the original MacGyver, so I didn't recognize him at all.
Yeah.
It's one of those odd things of, even during its like heyday in reruns, I never saw MacGyver. I don't know how. It barely ever came up. It's so strange because it was so fucking big.
Yeah, I think with a lot of the shows of that era, like Knight Rider, The A-Team, MacGyver, etc., there was those one or two shows that grabbed you, and that was what you would literally just stick with for life.
Yeah.
Like, for me, it was Knight Rider and The A-Team. Like, I've seen MacGyver, I've seen, like, The Fall Guy. And if there's an episode of those shows on, yeah, I'll sit down and watch. But A-Team or Knight Rider, if I know that they are airing, I will actively seek them out. And by God, I will be in front of my TV at the appointed time.
That's definitely me and like TNG DS9 Voyager.
Yeah.
Actually,
that actually does remind me of one weird thing that I still can't quite figure out with this movie, because this is the first and only time I have seen a pre-reference.
A pre-reference?
Because with Condor Man and his plan to extract Natalia by crossing the Alps, they specifically reference Bazooka Boy meets Hannibal Smith.
Ah, yes.
This comes up several times, something like 5 years, 4 or 5 years before the A-Team.
Mm-hmm.
And it is obviously a reference to Hannibal crossing the Alps.
Yeah.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say that Hannibal's last name was not Smith. Because the actual Hannibal Smith, he uses Hannibal in honor of that Hannibal.
Yeah. So that Hannibal was Hannibal Barca of the Barkid family.
Okay. And
Barcelona is named after them. Because they founded it.
I feel like, yeah, that would be a good reason. And it's one of those fascinating things where you just want to know how that happened.
Mm-hmm. Just the weird confluences of things. And I assume that that's where some of the spy shit comes in. Because for a good deal of time, and even kind of to this day, James Bond and James Bond-y satire is often focused around, like, the Matterhorn is in this, and Switzerland, and all that shit. And it's like, you know, because fucking money. Lake Geneva, all that goddamn shit. And so my presumption is, if you're trying to come up with a character that happens to be in the Swiss Alps, your mind goes to only a few things, and Hannibal is very high, and Smith is just the most, you know, like, it's the most common English last name. So Hannibal Smith both kind of sounds interesting and is a completely logical name to come up with. Personally, I would have gone with Hannibal Jones.
Yeah.
Jones is clearly the better action name, but this is only 1981. How the fuck are they supposed to know that? Once again, Disney is not talking to that George Lucas kid. They really should be.
Yeah, and I didn't actually go on Google and try to figure out how that happened. And the only thing that I could, literally the only thing I could find was a Reddit discussion where somebody claimed that Stephen J. Cannell, who created the A-Team, I think had worked on The Greatest American Hero, and the writer for Condor Man had stolen something from Cannell, and Cannell, in response, lifts the name Hannibal Smith from this movie, which is like, it's that it's plausible, but there's something about it that just doesn't quite feel right.
Yeah, it's too neat. It's a backwards built narrative.
Yeah.
It sounds cool. It sounds fun. And I'm sure that if you asked one or two of them about it, if they were still kind of pissed at each other, they'd go, yeah, yes. Yes, I did. Because fuck them. It doesn't necessarily mean it's the truth, but hey, it's a better story than nothing. So, yeah, all right.
And sadly, those are questions that we will never be able to ask, because I believe... I'm just Googling to double check, because... Yeah, that's what I thought, yeah. Stephen J. Cannell passed away in 2010.
Well, his very strange secrets and horrible crimes against cinema are buried with him.
Exactly.
So, how the fuck are you making up for this episode next week?
Well, I did remember, I did say pain before pleasure. We've gotten through the pain.
Yeah.
And the next three films are films that I picked because, to me, these are, if nothing else, pure visual art. And the first one is something that we have discussed reviewing before, but just never quite got around to, which was the 2005 spiritual sequel, spiritually adjacent, call the connection whatever you want, because it's almost entirely fan created. The Jim Henson film Mirror Mask, which is kind of Labyrinth ish.
Okay, I haven't seen that.
This will make up for this week.
I can't even remember a single aspect of it. That's incredible. This is going to be, I'm going in completely blind with no presumptions or like anything. I can't remember the trailer. I can't remember the brand. I can't remember the font. I can't remember who's in this. I don't know if it's animated or live action or CGI. This is going to be interesting.
It's... to my mind, anyway...
Oh, no, don't tell me.
Oh,
don't,
not specifically.
Don't tell me, yeah.
The only thing I'm going to say is... take the Jim Henson quality you know and love in terms of puppet work and put it instead toward 2005 animated CG creatures, blue screen backgrounds, things like that.
Okay. All right. Well, anything's better than Condor, man. And if you want to fruitlessly argue over that statement, I know you won't, you can contact us.
You can reach us to question my sanity for loving this film at realgeekshfx@gmail.com. We're on Twitter at realgeekshfx. You can find me at the Merit Time Lord on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok. I was going to say Hive, but let's be honest, nobody posts on Hive. Blue Skies, if I ever get sent the invite for that.
Mm.
Or just straight up email at themaritimelord@gmail.com.
And I can be found on Twitter at Friday in Halifax and Crash and Burn everywhere else, including Blue Sky. Fuck you, Elon. Fuck you.
Well, in that case, send me an invite.
They generate horribly slow, and I haven't even gotten one. Apparently, you have to wait weeks.
I think it's weeks. I think it's one invite every 2 weeks.
Well, you don't start off with one, so the counter begins. It's really nice, though. It's fucking, it's like waking up in Elysium. It's just really calm and shit. I love it. Until next time, goodbye!
See ya!